I'm certainly looking forward to this. When we went to Missouri, they showed us the most wonderful hospitality. They were warm and wonderful. A gentleman of great wit and intelligence, the Secretary of the National Federation of the Blind, please welcome with me Gary Wunder.
Oh, I thought I was off the hook there for a minute when she started talking about somebody of wit and intelligence. I actually wondered what the speech was going to be about. Oh, goodness, it's great to be here. It's been a while since I've been in New York, as you know. And to tell you the truth, I don't remember what I said to you in my last banquet speech. Now, this just goes to show how much easier things would be if I always told the truth. Actually, it's an honor to be here, to be asked to speak on the 50th anniversary of our affiliate. I remember the 50th anniversary of our national body in 1990, when all of us on the board were asked to say a little something for the time capsule which would be opened when the Federation is a century old. Oh, I remember thinking at the time what an honor this was to have my voice preserved for such a momentous occasion in the history of the Federation. Then it hit me. Hit me hard. The people of 2040 would expect me to say something more profound than, "Howdy, my name is Gary Wunder." I have no recollection of what I said on that tape, and I have every expectation it will be so remembered by the Federation of 2040. Tonight, I'd like to do something special to commemorate this golden anniversary. Perhaps with a little luck and some willingness on your part, we can journey back to those beginnings and hear the voices who are, in large part, responsible for our sharing a banquet room, an organization, a philosophy about blindness, and a life that would be the envy of any of the people who we visit tonight through their writings. Some of the names you will hear tonight will be familiar, but likely many will not. If you hear me mispronounce any one of them, just exercise your good old New York courtesy and shout out the right name, okay? That's all right. Empire State Association of the Blind, 1072 Bergen Street, Brooklyn 16. Who knows what the 16 was? New York. Exactly. Sterling 35858. Okay. Acting Officers Board of Directors, R. Dinsmore, President. Dominic DeJohn, Vice President. Stanley Carnes, Secretary Treasurer, February 8, 1956. Letter going to Dr. Jacobus Tenbrook, 2652 Shasta Road, a familiar address, Berkeley 8, California. EIGHT, not ATE. Dear Dr. Tenbrook, at last, I have a report for you on the progress made in getting together an organization which would like to affiliate with the National Federation of the Blind. Since my report to you at the board meeting in Omaha last summer, we have spent a great deal of time and effort in recruiting members and making plans to create an effective organization. We attempted to be a bit selective so that we would have a minimum of dead wood to obtain responsible people for both officers and committee material. Well, some things change, I guess. and to make sure, insofar as we were able, that we could avoid domination by any one group, and to avoid, as far as possible, factionalism. Now, I've got to tell you that I took this from the original letter, and where I've stopped here is the first period in the whole letter. All of these were separated by commas. We have 122 members, only three of which are from upstate. However, we have made what effort we could to induce these people to come in with us, and unfortunately, George Card, who was intending to come over here last fall for that job, was unable to come. This was a disappointment to all of us, but we understood your problem there. But we went right ahead on the local level anyway, leaving the door open to the upstate groups, as you will see by the Constitution. This organization loaned its office and clerical facilities to aid the project, that organization being Blind Industrial Workers, until such time as they had their own offices and mailing address. Naturally, the charity agencies here gave us no encouragement in this matter, as we reasonably understand that they do not care too much about having this state in the fold of the National Federation. So, after some very careful planning, we finally called the meeting for an election of officers and ratification of the Constitution for Sunday, January 29th, at the Hotel Claridge, 160 West 44th Street in Manhattan. We arranged for the hall from between 2 p.m. to 5:30 p.m. The first hour was open to all interested parties to hear explanations of the need for such an organization, and for a question and answer session, also arranging for registration of those wishing to join at that time. Now, though the weather was extremely bad, with a sloppy rain, same as today, we had a very good turnout, and a great deal of interest was evinced in a lively discussion on the pros and cons of the matter. And at a little after 3 p.m., the regular meeting was called to order, and ratification of the Constitution got underway. The committee working on this matter had done a great deal of thinking on the same, and the Constitution was accepted by an overwhelming majority, with few corrections. Of course, you know what ratification of constitutions entail. But after some time, it was ratified, and elections of officers got underway until a full slate was finally elected. The rest of the time was devoted to discussion of formulating a program. I was appointed legislative committee chairperson. If anybody has a book or something that I could use to raise this up, I'd appreciate it. Okay. I was appointed as the head of the legislative committee. Good. Yeah, this'll work. Oh, yeah, and I get to keep it too. So I was elected legislative committee chairman, which promises to be a job in itself in this state. The officers are elected as follows: President Anthony Parise, concession stand operator; Norman Decker, first vice president, concession stand operator; second vice president Ella Wiggins, housewife; corresponding secretary Jack Karp, engineer; recording secretary Charles Winkert, retired; treasurer Reverend Montanus, minister. M-O-N-T-A-N-U-S. You don't remember him?
Somebody said Ralph.
Okay. I just read it as I pulled it from the file. The president, Mr. Parise, is a young man in his 30s. Parise, okay. Alert and on the ball and well thought of, and had quite some experience in presiding over meetings. We have our legislative committee intact and planning for a Ways and Means Committee, also a grievance committee, and a publicity committee. Hope to have this completed in about a week. Can you hear those commas kicking in there in place of periods? It has been the understanding here that this group would apply for membership in the Federation at the earliest possible moment, and such affiliation is necessary if we are to progress, and it would greatly strengthen our position. If by some chance it does not click, it would certainly make our position here look sort of ridiculous. Once we become affiliated, I believe the upstaters will be much more inclined to join our ranks. And if George Card, first vice president, is able to come over here this spring, he will have a good talking point. In stating my own position here and the position of the blind industrial workers, which has carried on the fight for the blind by itself for the past 30 years, this is our last attempt to try for such a program of organizing the state affiliation with the NFB. For we have our own problems to attempt to survive, and with the constant pounding of the press against what they call charity gyps and new state laws to regulate such organizations as ours, which must go to the public for funds, our own small staff is pretty well taken up with its own problems. We feel that by creating such an organization as we have here, the work is being distributed more equally, and we can work closely with the new group and be of great help to it in its work. The large charity organizations here have their hands so tightly tied by their obligations to the State Department of Social Welfare that they are no longer in a position to utter any sort of protest against the treatment of the blind in this state. With their contributions falling off because of the press bombardments, they are becoming more and more dependent upon the vocational rehabilitation for their workshop clients, and the ruling elements have their large boarding homes, which are filled with relief clients, and the State Department of Social Welfare exercises control over them by virtue of having to approve their status before clients are certified for such homes. Thus, the blind are really on their own, and the situation is becoming quite unhealthy. If this thing does not click, I am afraid the blind of this state are in for a very rough going. In any event, we have done our job here and hope it meets with your approval. I remain sincerely yours, Ray Densmore. Next, National Federation of the Blind, Incorporated, Office of the President, March 20, 1956, Bulletin Number 56-6. Membership News Bulletin. The National Federation of the Blind takes great pride and gratification in announcing the formation and admission into National Federation of the Blind membership, an affiliate in the state of New York. This development not only gives us a 37th affiliate, but gives us a base of organized and organizational activity in the most populous state in the Union. Many good federationists believe New York is also a state most desperately in need of federationism and an organized movement of blind people speaking for themselves. The name of the new affiliate is the Empire State Association of the Blind. After months of careful planning, the association was brought into being at a meeting held January 29, 1956 at the Hotel Claridge, again with the address, which I'll skip. At that meeting, the Constitution was adopted, officers elected, and the organization formally set in motion. Next letter, August 28, this time of 1957. Mr. Peter A. Roydell, Box 265, Niagara Square Station, Buffalo 1, New York. It's hard to be humble when you're one, isn't it? Dear Peter, I am today instructing our treasurer, Mr. Emil Art, 3021 South Lincoln, Springfield, Illinois, to send you a check in the amount of $150. This amount is to be used for organizational expense, and you are to render an itemized account of your expenditures to me as soon as the $150 has been spent. I am delighted to hear that you and Wilbur Webb will soon be on the road to organize Binghamton. You are, of course, perfectly right that George Card has done a magnificent job in New York, but the organizational opportunities are practically limitless there. More power to you, and call on me anytime I can help. Since this letter is also going to Wilbur Webb, I shall raise a program matter which I may or may not have raised before. I would like to suggest that during the Saturday afternoon program, a substantial amount of time be set aside for informal questions and answers about the NFB. I shall be glad at that time to answer any questions and discuss any matters about the Federation that anybody wishes to propound. If George Card is on hand, he can join me in a panel. If there are not sufficient questions, I will stimulate them, or alternatively, informally talk about the Federation on my own. It is hard to estimate the proper amount of time for this sort of thing, but I would say that at least an hour would be desirable, and other parts of the afternoon program should be so flexible that additional time could be added as needed. Carl Jacobson will appreciate that one. Cordially. Okay, so there you have it, the beginnings of an affiliate of the National Federation of the Blind in New York. And with the mechanical work of creating an organization behind them, they started the business not only of doing the work to advance the blind, but becoming a real family of the blind. Ray Densmore, November 14, 1956. Going to Dr. Jacobus Tenbrook, Berkeley 8, California. Dear Chick, thank you so much for your warm words of sympathy on the passing of my wife. I'm sorry that you did not get to know her better, for everyone who did thought the world of her. She was my secretary and the treasurer of our organization for over 16 years. I miss her every minute of the day, and shall always cherish her memory. For all of my memories were happy ones. We had been married for 32 years and had kept company for 4 years before that in the school orchestra together. Little school plays, happy parties, dances. Two grown children married and doing well. On the credit side of the ledger, I should say that we were luckier than many people, had our fun while we were in our youth, and had the health to enjoy it. This does not make it any easier now, for it is a shock that I will not soon forget, but know from a practical standpoint, life must go on. In building the Empire State Association, she worked quietly in the background and very effectively. Her loss now leaves me with all of the work on my shoulders, and I hope to get back into the fight soon. In the meantime, with new chapters coming in, we are automatically securing more working material, for New Rochelle is now in. Also, Niagara Falls and Syracuse is expected to follow, and so perhaps Rochester. I wrote at length to Mr. William Tiffany of Jamestown, Chairman of the Lions Club Legislative Committee, setting forth our two legislative objectives, which this year include reinserting the word willing into the clause dealing with liability of relatives to support their blind relatives in the state welfare law, and also making it mandatory upon the State Commission for the Blind to install vending stands in state property either owned or leased by the state. Must close now and wish the best of success to the movement, and as I stated before, I'll do everything in my power to keep things on an even keel here. Hope that the national organization will be able to lend guidance to the state group when needed, but I believe that, given time, it will be one of the most effective in the country. Thanking you again and hoping this finds you in good health and good spirits, I remain sincerely and cordially, Ray Dinsmore. Now we have a letter from Mr. Julius Goldberg, November 24, 1956, going again to Dr. Tenbrook. As I read through these, I cannot figure out how that man had time to be a professor and write five books. I should have written several weeks ago, but after returning from the convention, I was so inspired with the amount of knowledge gained that I immediately began organizing the Manhattan chapter. We rounded up about 125 blind members, all living in the borough of Manhattan. Doing all of this work really didn't leave me much time to even write to you. Of course, after you form an organization and you get people together in a common cause, you soon begin to spend a fair amount of time and energy getting them to attack their problems rather than attacking their neighbor. Letter to Mr. John Taylor, National Federation of the Blind, 1908 Q Street, Northwest, Washington, D.C. It is from Mr. William Dwyer.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, absolutely. We heard that name. Rensselaer, New York. Yes, no. Okay. We had a talk about that a little bit ago. It was all I could do not to say Van Rensselaer, but September 29, 1957. Dear John, I like this letter. When I returned from work on Thursday, I was told of your phone call. You talked to my oldest daughter. After thinking over your chance arrival, I am convinced that your presence was more planned than chance. George Carr asks John Kirsch if he should have a speaker attend our meeting to kind of help us out, and John Kirsch said, told him that we really didn't need anyone, that we could get along without you. Of course, John Kirsch was speaking as one who had no intention of attending himself and didn't care one way or another how we made out. Believe me, I was glad to have you there, and would have told Bill Webb I wanted a speaker here, but I was afraid we would have a poor turnout and we'd have had a speaker coming all the way to Albany to talk to a half a dozen people that already determined to keep the chapter going. I'm sure you will agree with me that we are better off with a small number of people that can understand thoroughly what is being said than we are with 50 people who just let everything go in one ear and out the other. Some of the blind are old and have been on welfare for years. They are so accustomed to sitting back and being handed things that you just can't change them. Whenever a new organization shows up, they want to join to see what's free. Now the freeloaders are drifting away from us, and we are getting younger people that want to organize and work hard to have a good chapter. Also, these people are self-supporting and not looking for something for themselves personally. Now, If you look back in the record, you will find a very lengthy report of the meeting just discussed, which was sent to Dr. Tenbrook by John Taylor. It was a quite contentious meeting, and his attendance there was no accident. Now, because you had the wisdom to limit me some on time, I've not included this letter. But there is a smaller one which went to Dr. Tenbrook as a result of that meeting that I thought you would enjoy. It goes like this. October 1, 1957. Dear Chick, the following is an account of the expenses which I incurred in meeting with the Albany and Jamestown chapters of the Empire State Association of the Blind on Wednesday and Thursday, September 25 and 26. Transportation by air, Washington to Albany, Jamestown, and return, $66.55. Taxi fare, $7.66. Tips and miscellaneous, $3.50. Hotel, $11.25. Telephone, $2.76. Total, $91.56. Cordially, John Taylor. Of course, our history here in New York doesn't just focus on self-organization. There were tangible obstacles and desperately needed opportunity we were intent on securing. Consider as an example the following letter written after our battle to be allowed to take civil service exams, then to have those exams graded, then to have our results sent to hiring officials, and eventually mandating that they take our scores seriously and consider us for jobs. Letter from Miss Carmela Fusco. Gentlemen, I read the article in your publication about openings for 500 blind switchboard operators. I called the New York regional office, but they would not give me any information whatsoever. I am now learning how to operate the switchboard at the New York Guild for the Jewish Blind. Therefore, I am very interested in obtaining some more information on the subject. Would you please send me all information available? Thank you for your cooperation in advance. And she signs it, Carmela Fusco. Letter back to her, dear Miss Fusco. In reply to your recent request for information regarding employment opportunities for the blind as telephone switchboard operators, the Braille monitor you referred to contains a general summary of such information as is now available. Next week, the U.S. Civil Service Commission will formally announce an amendment to the announcement for these positions, which will admit blind persons for the first time to grades 1 and 2 positions in the Federal Civil Service. Information regarding the Braille attachment should be obtained from the local companies providing telephone services. Generally speaking, there is an initial charge of $25 for installing the Braille attachment and a monthly fee of $9 for the first 20 stations and an additional dollar per month for each additional 20 stations, although there may be some slight variation in this charge from one part of the country to another. These rates are generally applicable. In order to qualify for positions in the federal service, it will be necessary for applicants to pass an examination administered by a local or regional office of the Civil Service Commission. The names of the persons who pass the examination will then be placed on a civil service register and will be sent to appointing officers as vacancies occur. Efforts to secure employment as a switchboard operator should not, however, be confined to positions within the federal service. The state, county, and municipal boards, as well as those in private industry, are excellent sources of employment, which should be fully explored. If you desire additional information, or if I may be helpful in any matter, please feel free to call me. I have high hopes that opening this classification to the blind will result in a substantial number of new positions. very truly yours. And he signs it. I'm going to wrap up with one more letter, but before I do, perhaps we can sum up just a bit. In 50 years, how interesting are the similarities and the differences. At our founding, we fought for the right to take civil service exams. Today, to get people to take them and the jobs which follow. Back then, we fought for programs of public assistance. Today, to keep from being bound and ensnared by them. Early on, we fought for the right to live apart from our families and have an income independent of them. Today, we fight for the right to keep our families when our ability to be blind parents is called into question. When we started our challenge, our challenge was getting the right to organize. Today, it is the will to organize. My last letter for you tonight was written by Dr. Jernigan to a person in New York who expressed real despair over the direction of his chapter and the hope that people in it could ever be encouraged to become competent, self-sufficient adults. I use this letter, taken from the mid-1970s, because the challenge it gives is just as timely today as it was 30 years ago. Des Moines, Iowa, June 23, 1975. Dear Blank, I have your very thoughtful letter concerning the chapter, and I thank you for it. In the beginning, all revolutions have more promise than performance about them. In more than one instance, when George Washington stood forth to fight the British, he pretended to have fortifications which he did not possess, using bales of straw or anything else he could lay hands on to deceive the British. Not only did he have to pretend to the British, but often to his own soldiers. Soldiers in one province were encouraged by tales of strength and valor from divisions of the army in other localities, and sometimes, doubtless, he had to pretend to himself to build up his courage and give him strength for the battle. When I was in California in the 1950s, I conducted a study on the employment of the blind in the teaching profession. We found that California had no blind persons teaching in regular public school classes. I had heard that Ohio had 13. I suspected that these were largely non-existent, being trumped up claims by the state agency to bolster its prestige. I suspected that many of these teachers were high partials, not considered blind by themselves or others. However, I did not believe that the state agency would give such a picture if asked for a letter and a report. So I wrote the Ohio agency a complimentary letter and told them I would like a statement about the blind of that state who were teaching in the public schools. Back came the reply, glowing as expected. I made much of that reply, using it to encourage our own members to have faith that they could achieve, and also using it to beat superintendents over the head with it, with the statement, if the blind of Ohio can teach, then certainly the blind of California can too. Today, there are more than 100 blind persons teaching in the public schools of California, and they are for real. They are cash customers. Now, perhaps, we can use California to beat Ohio up to the line, and both of them to encourage other states. More and more of our local chapters are solid and substantial, aware of the movement and what they must do to make it succeed. But some are still chapters in name only, waiting for the touch of a leader and the sound of the call to awaken. If all our members were well educated, aware, knowledgeable, and enthusiastic, then it is highly questionable whether we need the movement at all. Much of our work is still ahead of us, yearning, challenging, needing, and waiting to be done. Your letter showed that you are perceptive. It also indicates that you have read the material and understood what it said. Therefore, I can only say this to you. You are there, and I am not. The chapter needs building and strengthening. So, build and strengthen it. Find a way. A way exists. What more can I say to you? If there is resistance, find a way to overcome it. If there is resentment, soothe it. If there is lack of knowledge, teach. If you lack knowledge yourself, learn. The need is great and the time is now. You are the one who must find the way, do the job, and make it work. So we bring our time machine back to the present, knowing we stand on the shoulders of giants and wanting in our own way to ensure that people 50 years from now can look at us and know that while we are not the Federation's pioneers, we too did our part to advance the cause of the blind. My experience this weekend says we will indeed be around, and whether in body or spirit, let's all commit to meet here in 2056 to celebrate the life and the work of the next 50 years in the National Federation of the Blind.
Tall order. Some of us will be here in 2056. You know what? We'll all be here in 2056. One way or another. No. I'm going to present. Gary, when you took the mic before, you needed something to prop your braille note on.
Yeah.
And Lori lent you a box there. Well, she's not lending it to you. She has her own box. I'd like to present to you the same thing that Mindy and I bought for that prize. That is the collector's 50s box of candy, sir. They take it home in 1950. Remember 1956. Now I do know the difficulty in getting that as a carry-on. It might present a problem as a carry-on, but I really think it beats a T-shirt. All right, he just gave me my gavel back, all right. The work, Gary's right, Dr. Jernigan was right, the work is now, we set about doing it. I want to give you back to the Mistress of Ceremonies, Mindy.
Thank you. Let's do that. I like that idea, door prize. A door prize, okay? And after the door prize, I'd like to see if we can't get POBC. Are you still selling tickets, POBC? You are, okay. So after this door prize, would you be ready to, okay? And then after that, we'll ask for the guide dog for Nagdu to come up and do yours. But right now, we would like to give a door prize in honor of that wonderful speech, address, whatever it was.